English prose in the age of Milton. Next topic. Introduction. The age of Milton, that is 1625 to 1660, comprising the Caroline as an commonwealth, was an age of singular activity in field in English of English prose. The central event of the age, political struggles culminating in the execution of Charles I and the establishment of the Commonwealth, exerted both a hampering and an encouraging influence on the prose writers of the age. Much was written by them in sheer party spirit to promote either of the two conflicting parties, the Puritan and the Cavaliers. Cavaliers. Thus the air was thick with party pamphlets, most of which proved only the ephemeral interest. Further, this age was remarkable for its production of some very eloquent and complaining sermon of the first rank in the language. The age of Milton has been very aptly called the golden age of English pulpit. The name of such powerful writer as Taylor, Robert South, Fuller, Isaac Burrow, the Richard Baxter are associated with his department of writing. In the field of moral, social and political philosophy, the age was enriched by the works of Sir Thomas Browne, John Heath and Hobbes. Clarendon and Fuller wrote distinguished histories. Isaac Walton composed the quaint work of Compleat Angular, a work of its own kind, and then there was the almighty Milton, who distinguished himself almost as eminently in the field of prose as that of poetry. In a word, the age of Milton was a period of prolific activity in the field of English prose, touching many departments of life. The Baroque style, B-R-O-B-A-R-O-Q-U-E, Baroque style. As regards prose style, the writers of the age of Milton exhibit a curious retrogressive tendency. Every past age in England had in some measure advanced literature from antiquity to modernity. But the age of Milton does not seem to have advanced English prose from the extravagance and antiquity of the prose of Elizabethan period toward the ideal of simplicity. Simplicity, comprehensibility and lucidity associated with the prose of the writers of the age of Queen Anne, 1702-14. Right in the Jacobean age, 1603-25, we come across some important writers like Bacon and the characters writer who look to the future and dissociate themselves from the ornateness, prolixity, involvedness and diffuseness of the prose their contemporaries. The Gothic style of most Elizabethan influenced a sizable proportion of the prose writer of the age of Milton. The lesson of simplicity and sententiousness set forth by Bacon and the character writers was forgotten, with the result that a kind of Baroque style was cultivated during the age of Milton. It was at the end of the age that the Restoration writers like Dryden stemmed the retrogressive tide and furthered the advance toward simplicity and lucidity, which came fully and effectively to be realized by such writers as Addison and Swift after the close of 17th century. However, it may be admitted with H.C.J. Grierson that he progressed towards simplicity and modernity cost the English prose same freshness, harmony, dignity and poetic richness of phraseology. When prose become strictly functional in nature, these qualities have to be done without. With these preliminary remarks, let us proceed to examine the work of major prose writer of the age, Sir Thomas Browne, 1605 to 1682. Sir Thomas Browne was a quaint figure, though a very typical prose writer of his age. He may be compared with Burton before him. But whereas Burton was by profession a clergyman with a deep interest in medicine, Browne was by profession a physician with a very deep interest in religion. As a thinker and writer, he was a surprising blend of the medieval and the modern characteristics. He had a scientific love of investigating the physical truth and the qualities of both a mystic and a skeptic. Was a crusader for a rationalistic appraisal of both the work and the word of God. A great supporter of religious tolerance, a zealous campaigner for the removal of error in all fields of learning and divinity, but himself tenaciously wedded to such error as belief in witchcraft and the mystic supremacy of the number five. His works reveal his attractively quaint personality in its fullness, and therein lies the reason of his perpetual appeal to the reader of all ages. The modern reader may justly scoff at the pomposity and the occasional absurdity and the learned doctor, but he has to admit with the all abdorist that assuredly he is the owner of a strong, generous heart. Browne, Religio Medici, The Religion of a Doctor, which was published in 1642, immediately achieved continental fame and was translated into several languages. The work may be called an autobiography of the soul. But apart from its importance in revealing the personality of the writer, the work intended a curative effect on the sick society of the age. It is likely, says Tucker Brooke in A Literary History of England, edited by Albert Sivo, that Dr. Browne, in all his estimable career, never prescribed a better medicine than when he wrote Religio Medici. The world was sick of horror, on the brink of civil war, and in the throes of a harsh theology. The book is a prophylactic against totalitarian domination. The world took it to its heart. Browne's Pseudodoxia, Pseudodoxia, Epidemica, Vulgar Errors, which comprised 7 books, attempted to correct the common error in the field of mineral and vegetable bodies. Animal, man, the author himself is not altogether free from error in his Hydroptia, or on Burial and the Garden of Cyrus, both published in 1658. The emphasis of clearly on style. The former was occasioned by the recovery of a few sepulchral urns in Norwich, the habitat of the writer, as Lewis says in a note, a tryst of the oblivion which covers the tress of man. Even though famous and with the subject, he plays as a dilettante in note, close. The latter work is concerned with the supremacy of the number 5, the quincunx. Browne's Christian Morals, published posthumously, is written in the character of a fairly orthodox Christian. Browne's prose style, though there are passages to lure lucidity charged with incisive energy, is a representation of the Bourcuire style. He has love of Latinized expression and poetic cadence and sonorous words. The interweaving of his harmonies, says Lewis, offer an enhancement to the ear sacrically less than that of the finest lyrics. The elegiac clergy, Taylor and others. The prose of the age of Milton, is remarkable for its pronounced religious slant. The secular interest of the Elizabethan and Jacobean periods seems to have yielded considerable place to religious interest. Lewis remarks in this connection, in noted comma, the rich humanity and widespread curiosity, the intermingling of comedy with tragedy in the portrayal of life were replaced by a passionate controversy on the form of Christian religion and search, which became almost an obsession for the way of salvation. In the Caroline period, there was a complete polarization of religious affiliation and the Puritan and Protestant Anglican emerged as two groups irreconcilably opposed to each other. Both of them had eminent men to later among their rank. Whereas Milton was the most important of the Puritan, Jeremy Taylor was the best among the Protestant. Let us consider briefly the prose of the Anglicans first. Among the Anglican, the important prose writer were George Herbert, Thomas Traherne, John Hales, William Killingworth, John Gurdon, and Jeremy Taylor, 1613-67. Most of them mainly wrote sermons. The last named was the most distinguished and the most prophesizing, the most tolerant of all of them, along with the sermons of the Gave of the Liberty of Prophesizing, 1646, and his most famous work, Holy Living and Holy Dying, 1650-51. Like Brown, Taylor is preoccupied with the thought of human mortality. Like him, again, he is not afraid of death. He considered it as nothing but a middle point between the two lives, and then recent death of his wife prompted him further of enter in the contemplation of morality and the holy practice of prayer, as also the importance of faith and patience. Taylor's style is a good example of the Baroque style. His prose is a collection of long, rich, rolling sentences, each of which goes like the river Alf and Coleridge's Kubla Khan. The structure is Ciceronian and highly Latinized. Taylor's prose is characterized by a love of fancy at the cost of logic. Like the verse of the metaphysical, Taylor's prose manifests what T.S. Eliot calls the association and sensibility. He is very close to the Elizabethan and has been called not without justice. The Shakespeare of English prose and the Spenser of pulpit. According to Lewis, in Taylor's case, in noted comma, the logician become lost in the poet, noted comma, closed. Nevertheless, his prose is not without its beauty of harmony and dignity when he dwells on a theme dear to him, such as death for human frailty, the Puritans, Bacters, Miltons, and other. The Puritan camp was dominated by Milton, but there were also some other important figures such as Baxter and Prynne. As compared to the prose work of the Anglican, those of the Puritan are marked by violence and coarseness, and not unoften downright lack of good taste. In his Histomastic, 1632, Prynne made a violent attack on the alleged immorality of the stage. Elsewhere, he lashed at the Anglican bishops. Richard Baxter, 1652-91, however, is not so intolerant. He wrote two manuals of practical religion, The Saint Everlasting Rest, 1650, and Call to the Unconverted, 1657, which remained for long very important book in the Puritan tradition in both England and America. His style is quite simple but has few other qualities to recommend itself. The prose of John Owen, 1616, 83, another Puritan divine, is again, as Lewis remarks, rather dull and unwinting. Milton, from the age of 31 to 50, wrote a number of pamphlets on political and ecclesiastical theme. In this period, his poetic activity remained suspended except for the production of a dozen sonnets. One, his return from the continent to England has found the country on the troubled sea of noise and hoarse disputes. But he plunged into the sea and made his appearance felt. Milton prose is the work of an excellent poet who looked upon prose as something contemptible and the work of but his left hand. His prose is generally rhetorical and too highly latinized, but is not without its rocky strength and overwhelming grandeur. For one thing, it has the quality of high seriousness plus sincerity. Milton always has a point to make and does make it, and quite often effectively. But some bitterness does become manifest here and there. Areopagitica, a speech for the liberty of unlicensed printing, 1644, is Milton's most outstanding prose work. It was an eloquent plea for the liberty of the press. Regarding Milton's style, Lewis observed the remorseless length of his sentence renders them formidable at first to the reader, but from their troubled vehemence break forth at times a scathing irony or a sudden splendor. They reveal the impetuous idealist, unpractical and thoroughgoing. Philosophy, Hobbes, Harrington, etc. The prose of Thomas Hobbes, 1588 to 1679, rises above all political and religious controversies. Hobbes was Bacon's secretary and Descartes' correspondent. He combines in his philosophic work of empiricism of the former and mechanistic rationalism of the latter. His important work, Leviathan, 1651, sets forth in totalitarian, materialistic and rationalistic philosophy. Leviathan, says Lewis in inverted comma, is written in strong logical massive prose, exempt from the oratorical vehemence and ornament of his great contemporaries and heralding the prose of the classical period, inverted comma closed. James Harrington, in his utopian work Oceana, 1656, offered to controvert the view of Hobbes favoring absolute monarchy. The Cambridge Platonist Henry Moore, 1640-87, the Ralph Cudworth, 1617-88, wrote in opposition to Hobbes' rationalism. The prose of all these writers in fanciful and divide the lucidity, exactness, the hallmark of Hobbes' styles. The eccentrics. Lastly, we come across some eccentrics who wrote about the middle and the 17th century. Of them, Sir Thomas Urquhart of Comerley, 1611-60, translated the first two books of Rabelais. Gargantua, Gargantua, 1653. In giving free play to fancy, he outdid even Brown. Thomas Fuller, 1608-61, an Anglican clergyman, wrote the Church History of Britain, 1655-56, Holy and Pomfen State, 1642, and the History of the Worthies of England, 1662. Fuller's prose is somewhat quaint, but has an element of wit, even the wit of the metaphysical kind. At any rate, he is delightful even though in pathos. He wittily describe a Negro as an image of God cut in ebony. The soldier, Fuller writes at a place at the same time shoot out his prayers to God and his pistol at his enemy. Isaac Walton, 1593-1683, falls in a class by himself. He is known for his biographies of Donne, Henry Wotton, Hooker, George Herbert and Bishop Sanderson, written between 1640 and 1678. There says Hardin Crase in a history of English literature, Hardin Crase in inverted comma, masterpieces not of biography but of style and temper, hearty sincerity, cheerfulness and good nature, and personal interest in the men treated. His mistake as a biographer, for example in the case of Hooker, have to be guarded against, but his picture are essentially true. Inverted comma closed. Walton's more important work, however, is the Campion Angler, 1653, which is essentially a treatise on fishing, but has alongside many incidental attraction for the student of literature. Walton was an ironmonger by profession, and he spent all of his leisure on fishing, of which sport he acquired an almost uncanny knowledge. He sets forth his knowledge in this book. Its charms, says Hardin Crase, rest also on its background, which is made up of natural scenery, life at inns, fishermen's tales, and casual conversation with fishermen, and of casually interpressed song and lyrics. He, says Lewis in his A Short History of English Literature, serves as a link between Marlowe and Dryden. We can easily perceive in his prose, even though it is the prose of an ironmonger, a marked Elizabethan quality. He describes, says Lewis in inverted comma, these healthful pleasure in a prose limpid, if a little slow, still redolent of the artificial pastoral here and there, but wherein lies an visery of English countryside. Inverted comma closed. And the topic is also closed. The topic English prose in the age of Milton over.